going to town meetings for well over 300 years. I declare a quorum present. Coffee and snacks are being provided this evening by the Culinary Club at Lincoln Sudbury High School, Regional High School, where they cook, bake, and fundraise for charity. Please turn off all your cell phones. Please give your name and address for the record when you're called on to speak. If you desire to be recognized, please just raise your hand. Again, for the benefit of the hall, we had some pretty extensive debates. There were lots of folks who want to speak, and it's just impossible to call on everybody. For those who wish to speak and were unable to, my apologies. All motions to amend must be in writing and must be given to me in duplicate so I can share one with the town clerk, and a third one will go to the ViewGraph. Rather than giving it to the ViewGraph operator, Mark Thompson, first, you're best off giving it to me first so I can rule on the amendment. Also, just for the benefit of the hall, the earlier I get the amendment, the more chance you have of having it ruled within the four corners of the article. The problem is, when I'm given an amendment, particularly a complex one, immediately before it's being given, I usually want not only myself, we're going to have to ask the FinCom to respond, the Selectmen to respond. If there's a particular board involved, I ask them to respond. But most importantly, I need that amendment to be clear and concise and for you to be able to understand it so you can vote on it. What doesn't work for me is when amendments are sprung, not technical amendments or short amendments, but rather complex amendments. I would prefer that you had time to think about it, read it, digest it, debate it, and then vote on it. So if you do have amendments, you're well advised to giving them to me in advance of when you plan to make the amendment. And keep in mind, anything that you give to me is public information. It's going to be shared with other people. If anyone asks me, I will tell them. And town officials, I actually approach town officials and ask for their to review it so that they can give an intelligent report to you on what their position is on a particular amendment. Having said that, I do require that the amendments be given to me any time before you make them. A reminder that we only have registered voters will be allowed to vote. Anyone who's a non-resident be asked to sit in the last two rows to my left, the last two rows to my right. Please remember that presenters can only speak for 10 minutes. Speakers can only speak for 5 minutes without leave of the hall. And as a speaker, you cannot assign part of your time or call on someone else. Again, to tell the hall, whoever is presenting a motion, if your motion is different than what appears in the warrant that voters have already seen, after you make your motion, after it's seconded, and before you make your presentation, your first order of business is to explain to the hall how your motion is different than what appears in the warrant. Kindly remember that we have no audible sounds, either pro or con, when a speaker is speaking, before they speak, after they speak. There'll be a majority vote on each article unless it appears otherwise in the warrant or unless I announce otherwise. Anybody who needs a warrant, we still have a few out here in front of me at the stage. And a reminder, bathrooms are across the hall from the auditorium, and fire exits are the two doors you came in, as well as you can exit through the stage. I've been asked to announce that the Earth Decade Committee would like to thank all of those residents who've already made tax-deductible donations to the New England Wind Fund. Through your generosity, they are halfway to their goal of 170 households, which will entitle Sudbury to receive an extra bonus grant of money. For more information, see the table outside of town meeting where you checked in or attend the presentation on global warming this Saturday at LS from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Article 25, Jody Kablack, Planning Director.
Move to indefinitely postpone Article 25.
Is there a second? There is. Ms. Cadillac.
Good evening. I'm Jody Cadillac, the Director of Planning and Community Development, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Town Manager and the Board of Selectmen on this article. Over the last 1.5 years, the town has been negotiating with Mr. Eric Johnson to purchase his land located at 189 Landham Road. Mr. Johnson had lived on the property for much of his long life and was excited at the prospect of preserving his legacy of farming and conservation of the land in partnership with the town. Our mutual goal was to permanently preserve most of the property, approximately 34 acres, which contains sensitive environmental habitat and connects with SVT lands and town recreation and conservation lands, and to develop a modest number of affordable housing units in the front of the property along Landham Road. Unfortunately, Mr. Johnson passed away this year in January at the age of 91. His family at this time wishes to reevaluate the value of the property and is not ready to proceed with the sale. It's our hope to continue discussions with the Johnson family if their alternative plans do not work out. We hope to be back at a future town meeting with a very similar proposal. Thank you.
Finance Committee on the motion for indefinite postponement.
Finance Committee is in favor of indefinite postponement.
Selectman John Drabinski.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I apologize for our tardiness. The Board of Selectmen supports this motion.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see none. All those in favor of the motion, as it appears on the screen, raise your cards. Those opposed, it is unanimous. We'll move on to Article 26. Chris Morley of CPC, Community Preservation Committee, for a motion.
Nope. There we go. Move in the words of the article, with the sum of $250,000 appropriated and the transfer of $135,000 of community housing reserve funds retained from prior years.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Larry O'Brien will be speaking to this.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thank you, Mr. Morley. Good evening, everyone. This is Article 26. You have slides on this? Yes, good. Thank you. Good evening. Article 26 is a continuation of the work that has begun in terms of trying to generate more affordable housing for low and moderate income families in Sudbury. We've been working on this over many, many years, and most intensely since the inception of the Community Preservation Act. Last year, the Board of Selectmen brought to you Article 33, and that was to form the Sudbury Affordable Housing Trust. This is allowed under statute that's listed up there, Mass General Law, Chapter 44, Section 55C, and you supported that, and the trust was created. In the past year, Beth Rust, our housing specialist in the planning office, has been working diligently to first bring the interim trust together and then the full trust. A slate of trustees was put together and voted into place. I proudly represent the Board of Selectmen as one of the trustees on the Affordable Housing Trust. You may recall that as part of my presentation, I explained that one of the primary functions of the trust would be to accept funds specifically earmarked for affordable housing, construction, and or preservation. Preservation being a polite way of saying trying to maybe compete with realtors and developers in buying some of these smaller houses that are currently slated for teardowns. It's my understanding from the town planner and the building department that 10 applications have already, demolition applications have already been pulled this year to basically demolish smaller homes and replace them with larger homes on the same sites. This would give us the ability to be more nimble and to compete directly with them. So the purpose of this article, now that the trust is set up, is to accept the transfer of funds from the Community Preservation Act. The primary source would be the Community Preservation Act. We will get to the point where this will be an annual request for the transfer of funds. As you already know, the Community Preservation Act has three areas that statutorily require a 10% set aside, that being open space, historic, and housing. That amount represents approximately $250,000. There's an additional $135,000 that has been unallocated or unspent over the last 4 years of the Community Preservation Act. We're asking that both of those amounts, with your vote, be transferred this evening. As a matter of housekeeping, I would just like to remind you that under the statute that was on the first slide, we created the trust. We added some tighter regulation locally, and by taking the state enabling legislation and adding stricter controls, the trust is required to obtain Board of Selectmen approval in order to borrow money, mortgage trust assets, purchase or sell any sort of property. The Board of Selectmen and a board of six trustees administer the trust. The trust operates under existing municipal laws, including open meeting laws, borrowing and procurement regulations, and all municipal laws apply to the trust, same as they would apply to any other town boards and committees. In closing, the Board of Selectmen supports this article, along with the Finance Committee, Planning Board, Community Housing Committee, and the Sudbury Housing Authority. We ask for your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 26.
Thank you. And Mr. O'Brien, you reported for the Selectmen that they're in favor of the article. Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 26? Yes, right here. Can you just go up to the mic? Before you start, are you covering that mic over there? Yes. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I have a question that I would have asked in the debate under Article 25, but I believe it's relevant here. And that is that in Article 25, for the purchase of 35 acres of land, the allocations to the two categories of CPA funding, open space and housing, was going to be equal between the two. And this seems very peculiar, considering that 34/35 of the land purchased was going to be used for open space. So in the light of that, can somebody comment on how, given that these appropriations are put into the different categories, how is it determined that expenditures from that particular category are, in fact, the correct ones?
Town Planning Director, Jody Kablak.
A very good question, Mr. Coe, and one that did come up during the CPC debate and discussion on this article. But, however, although the property is 35 acres and 34 was going to conservation, the appraisal that we had completed for that property showed that that was a fairly unbuildable area. So half the value went to the $500,000 went to that 35 acres, which would only sustain one building lot. And then the other building lot, which was to be dedicated for affordable housing, took up the remaining half. Also, though, the allocation is subject to the recommendation by the Community Preservation Committee, but they did try to allocate it equally to the property values themselves.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 26? I see no hands. We'll go to a vote. All those in favor of Article 26? Signify by raising your hands. All those opposed? It passes almost unanimously. I've been asked to make a very important announcement. There were a pair of men's black gloves left here last night. See the town clerk if they're yours. We'll move on to Article 27. Mr. Morley.
Moving the worth of the article.
Is there a second? Yes, there is. Mr. Morley.
And Jody Kablak will be presenting.
This should be it for me tonight. Jody Kablak, Director of Planning and Community Development. Article 27 is to amend a former article that the 2005 annual town meeting voted. As stated in your warrant, this article requests that the town amend Article 42 from the 2005 annual town meeting, which authorized the town to allocate money to create additional affordable housing units in the town of Sudbury. And these were to be earmarked for either tear-down properties, which is one of the goals of the housing plan, or to increase the number of affordable units in 40B developments. For those of you who may not be familiar with 40B developments, although we throw the term around all the time, and it is something that the town is very familiar with in recent years, these developments allow the construction of housing at density levels much higher than under normal zoning. It's development under a state statute, which is the Chapter 40B, provided that the developer allocate at least 25% of the units constructed to be restricted to sale or rent by moderate or low-income households. So if you have a 20-unit development, five of those units have to be allocated for the lower moderate-income residents, and the remaining can be sold at market rate units. And Sudbury is currently experiencing significant construction of these 40B developments, and in the next 2 to 4 years, we will produce approximately 36 units of affordable housing in them. And they are located in various places in town. There's a brand-new one up on Route 117 North Road. It's a small cluster of 8 single-family homes. Another development is under construction right now on Old County Road. The main idea of Article 42 was to buy down or subsidize one or more market rate units in the 40B developments, which this subsidy would make the conversion more palatable to the developer and make it financially affordable to a lower moderate income household. And the town would use these CPA funds to pay the developer the difference between what the unit costs to build and what the family could afford under the state guidelines. For affordable units, it typically costs the developer much more money to build the unit than what he would get under the state sales prices, since the price is regulated by state agencies, and it doesn't track to real estate markets, but instead tracks to income levels that are calculated on a region-wide basis. And the buy-down amount is intended to bridge that gap for the developer and encourage him to create additional units of affordable housing in these developments. And the original article envisioned the buy-down of 5 units at a cost of $100,000 per unit, and the article did appropriate $500,000 for this purpose. We have successfully negotiated 1 unit at this amount in the development that's under construction on Old County Road. However, we have not been as successful in subsequent developments, and our recent efforts have shown that the $100,000 cap per unit is not enough money to convince developers to agree to this conversion. And this is because of the rise in construction and development costs that we have seen in the past 2 years. The developers have costs have increased significantly, while the sale price of these affordable units has stayed constant. These cost increases are prevalent nationwide. They're not just local to Sudbury or to the region, and they're attributed to the rising prices of metals, petroleums, and other construction materials. Amending the article as we have requested would provide additional flexibility to negotiate with the developers depending on the dynamics of a particular project. The buy-down amount, as we envision it, would average no more than $166,000 per unit and must be spent on 3 or more units, and that's the wording of the article as proposed in your warrant. This would ensure that there is some control both over the concept but allowing flexibility for the dynamics of each particular project. In addition, the article requests that the time limits set forth in the 2005 town meeting article be extended by 1 year each, which recognizes that housing projects do take longer to complete. Many of these 40B developments are in permitting stages for over 1 year, and then it takes the developer about another year to actually get the units online. And we are in the process of negotiating with several of the developers for buy-down units, but we're not there yet, and our funding commitment would have expired. We would have had to have these units under option by this town meeting. So we need an additional year for each of these. And this is because the development pace has slowed somewhat and the developers just aren't building them, even though they have permits for them. The one-year extension allows the commitment to be made by next year at this time and that the funds be expended by April of 2009. And we're hopeful that with the projects that we have in the pipeline, we will be able to meet these deadlines and expend this money. The Board of Selectmen, the Finance Committee, the Sudbury Housing Trust, and the Planning Board supports this article, and we urge passage. Thank you.
Thank you. As we heard, the Finance Committee, Bill Nealon.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Selectman O'Brien?
Likewise, Mr. Moderator from the Board of Selectmen.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 27? Yes. Can you bring that gentleman a mic, please? Can you flip the switch so it's on when you pass it? Thank you.
Ron Riggert, 133 Moore Road. I support investment in low-income housing. My question is, what happens or what governs the sale of these units, and who profits? Do we lose our investment at sale?
Thank you. Question for the planning director.
The town hopefully will never lose its investment. All of these units are subject to a perpetual deed restriction limiting the sale of these units to low and moderate income households at the sales price that's established by the state. So every unit is subject to a perpetual deed restriction.
Any other questions on Article 27 or comments? I see none. All those in favor of Article 27 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It is nearly unanimous. We're moving on to Article 28. Mr. Morley.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move in the words of the article with the sum of $25,000 appropriated, except the appropriation will be funded from historic reserves.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley for a presentation.
There is a fairly complete committee report in your warrant on Article 28. The bottom line is that the town owns most of the land between Dutton Road and Cardinal Mill Pond. It owns most of the pond. It owns the dam that makes the pond a pond. And it owns the historic building shown here, hopefully. Yes? The very foundation of which is integrated into the dam. The town's ownership is not one of centuries, but rather a couple of decades. In 2005, town meeting authorized the town manager to enter into a lease agreement that was intended to preserve the building and its foundation / dam. The parties were unable to agree on terms. Now, 2 years later, we need to begin in earnest to secure Henry Ford's former trade school from uninvited pests and or people and from the weather. We also need to procure expert opinion on the state of the foundation and dam and expert advice on the state of the building itself and what architectural options the town may have in that area. These last two make up the larger share of this appropriation and are needed to inform the town's ongoing investigation into the property's future use. The building site on the pond is one of Sudbury's more beautiful spots, but remains largely unknown and unused. While some may think unknown and unused is a good thing, we do at least need to be responsible caretakers and find out what is required to preserve the site for the future. Thank you.
Bill Nealon, Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Selectman O'Brien.
Board of Selectmen urges support of this article, especially due to the historic nature dating back to the time of Henry Ford here in Sudbury.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 28? I see no hands. All those in favor of Article 28 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It is nearly unanimous. Article 29. Mr. Morley.
Hello?
Chuck? Okay, go ahead.
Move in the words of the article with the amount of $30,000. No?
Okay.
Yep.
Is that receive a second? It does. Mr. O'Brien?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Larry O'Brien for the Board of Selectmen, also a member of the Town Center Committee, speaking on behalf of both. Board of Selectmen supports this article, and essentially this is the second part of two phases of funding. One was $70,000 that came with your support yesterday evening for Article 5 concerning the override budget. The second portion is $30,000, which is an appropriation from the Community Preservation Funds. Anyone who regularly drives through Town Center knows that it needs improvement. The roadway alignment is poor, causes confusion when turning or crossing through the intersection. The traffic lights are archaic and antiquated and cannot be timed to maximize performance. The shoulders of the roadway are uneven, unattractive, and dangerous. It is one of our most cherished landscapes in town, and yet it needs improvement. This has long been a priority for the Board of Selectmen. This project was originally planned in the early 1990s as an intersection project only, focusing mainly on roadway and not paying much attention to the historic aspect of Town Center. At the urging of the residents, the selectmen delayed this project in order to focus more on the historic aspects. The Sudbury Foundation committed to funding a study of the area if the focus was shifted to historic preservation, along with good design first and engineering second. $50,000 was generously granted by the Sudbury Foundation in 2005, and the project was underway. The Sudbury Center Improvement Advisory Committee, which I will refer to as the Town Center Committee because I'm not going to say that tongue twister over and over, was formed to advise the Board of Selectmen throughout this process. I am the Board of Selectmen's representative on this committee and have been actively involved in the project since its inception. Over the past 18 months, this committee has worked diligently on the planning and concept design phase for the project in conjunction with the consultant that was hired. They are the Cecil Group. They are a landscape architectural design firm from Boston. They are recognized as a world-renowned leader in landscape architectural design. And the team, according to the RFP that we issued, included SEA engineering consultants and the Public Archaeology Laboratory. These three firms combined are all highly qualified professionals, and they helped us to understand better the traffic movement issues, safety considerations, and design potential for the area. Throughout the summer of 2006, the consultants collected and analyzed traffic data. They created a base map of the project area. They compiled a report which compiled and evaluated the existing conditions in the project area, and they articulated the goals and objectives for the project, collected feedback from residents and stakeholders, and prepared several design alternatives for public comment. In the fall of 2006, the public forum was held at Town Hall, and the design concepts were unveiled. And we have three different design concepts here. They are in no particular order. They are significant, simplified, and moderate. If you look closely as they cycle through, you'll see that there's some various differences on the most complicated one. The town center of the town green is expanded, and the cut-through road that goes in front of Town Hall is eliminated, and the other two are of a lesser degree. What you see on the screen are the three possible sketch boards that I just described. The funds requested in this article will allow us to refine the project from concept to an actual engineering design stage while integrating the historical preservation aspects in order to accomplish the overall goal of the project. While the town is not committed to any particular design at this time, there are many components of each of these that are worthy of consideration. We will strive to strike the proper balance between preserving Sudbury's historical town center while also improving public safety. The committee worked specifically with First Parish Congregation on portions of this project that could impact their property. Just for those of you that may not be aware, their property is not only the property that the parish building sits on, but also the town green or the triangle or the common area, whatever you'd like to call it, is actually owned by First Parish. So they're a stakeholder on both sides of Concord Road, you might say. First Parish articulated their concerns for the widening of Concord Road, and the selectmen have agreed to further study this before committing to any particular redesign of the intersection. With your approval tonight, the town will hire a traffic engineer who is willing to work with us to create a context-sensitive design for the area which balances traffic safety and the historic landscape. This sensitivity is critical to the acceptance of the project by the community. Once completed, we will be able to see exactly what changes will need to be made to the roads and property edges and to determine the best solution, and additional public input will be sought for the next phase. The cost of this phase is $100,000, as I had described, and previously the $70,000 was approved. This $30,000 completes that $100,000, and it includes those items eligible for CPC funding, including landscaping, stone walls, walkways, and amenities such as period lighting and interpretive signage. The combined funding between Articles 5 and 29 will fund proper surveying of the area and more in-depth engineering design. Once designed, the town will seek funding sources both within and outside the budget to complete the construction. Chapter 90 funding will play a large part in the funding as well as additional CPA funds. The total estimated cost is between $1 and $2 million, depending on what design and improvements will be made. The last point that I would like to make to you that are here this evening is that there is a minority report in the town warrant, and we have verified that the eligibility of this project with the Community Preservation Coalition, This is an alliance of open space, affordable housing, preservation organizations. I believe we have a slide for that. These are all of the various organizations. I will not put you to sleep by reading them all, but as you can see, they're significant organizations, many of which you will recognize from reading the newspaper and listening to news reports. They're vastly involved in this issue across the state. And the Community Preservation Coalition is the clearinghouse for CPA issues and is revered as an authority on this topic. Members of the coalition on that slide, and as you can see, they're extremely well respected. In their publication that is entitled Potential Uses of CPA Funds, dated May 2004, under the category of historic resources, restoring or upgrade of municipal historic resources such as town halls, libraries, town commons, of which this qualifies parks or cemeteries, is an allowed expense under the open space category, scenic vistas, trails, and reconstructing roads to create a median strip with grass and trees are all eligible expenses. This project envisions all of these things. The town center is a locally designated historic district, which further qualifies it as an eligible project. The Community Preservation Act also allows for funding the design of projects such as this. Town Council has opined that this project is eligible for Community Preservation Act funding under the Act under Mass General Laws, Chapter 44B. The Board of Selectmen, the Planning Board, the Historical Commission, the Historic Districts Commission, the Sudbury Foundation, the Permanent Landscape, First Parish, and Presbyterian Church are all members of the Sudbury Center Committee. They all have representatives on the committee who have been actively involved in attending all of the meetings, and they all agree that passage of this article will give us the information we need to properly move forward with this project. I urge you to vote in favor of this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Nealon, Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Any further comment from the Board of Selectmen? The Board of Selectmen is in favor of the article. Thank you. I've been asked, in case you didn't catch it in Mr. O'Brien's speech, I've been asked by a member of the CPC for a legal opinion from Town Council. If the use of CPC funds for surveying and engineering of the town center is authorized under the Community Preservation Act.
Mr. Moderator, it is eligible for appropriation on the Act.
Thank you. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 29? Yes, right here. Can we bring a mic? You can come right in front and pass it.
Adam Miller, 1 Knobscot Road. I personally don't feel like this article for Community Preservation Fund funds really. I don't think this project really is in the spirit of that act, and that it doesn't. I mean, it, regardless of all the support we've seen in this presentation, I don't really feel that's very appropriate. Also, given that, as Selectman O'Brien said, the significance of Chapter 90 funding in for road work in this project, I mean, I don't really know of projects where, generally, the other night when we were speaking on the rail trail, the point was made that when, brought in the, generally when you make a road improvement, it brings in more traffic, and we already have so much traffic in that center. I don't feel like I don't know what to do about it, but generally road improvements when you build a bigger highway, more cars are on that bigger highway. So I don't know what the solution for that town center is, but I don't know that what kind of improvements could be made to do that. So I'm not particularly in favor of this article.
Anyone else like to be heard on Article 29? Yes, right here.
I'm Joe Sabowski, and I live at 799 Boston Post Road. I'm speaking as the Planning Board Liaison to the Sudbury Center Improvement Advisory Committee, or SIAC as I like to refer to it as. SIAC is made up of representatives from the various town boards and committees who have an interest in the historic town center. That includes the Historical Commission, the Historic Districts Commission, the Permanent Landscape Committee, the Planning Board, Selectmen, and various stakeholders in the area. including the Sudbury Foundation, First Parish, the Presbyterian Church, and a resident of the neighborhood. We've been at work studying the area, creating goals for the project, gaining public input, and reviewing design drawings for the past 18 months. We've had the opportunity to work with a talented group of professional landscape architects, designers, preservation planners, and traffic engineers who have created concept designs which give us some flavor for what is possible in terms of both roadway alignment and traffic safety, and redesign of the center for better public use and more authentic historical character. Our goals for the project, which have been prioritized according to input reviewed by over 90 residents at our May 2006 public forum, are to preserve and protect historic, cultural, and natural resources in the center, improve safety and accessibility for all those that use Sudbury Center, improve traffic flow but not traffic speed through the center, protect the existing scale and visual character of the center, and to establish a clear sense of the town center as a civic location. These goals are center stage in our deliberations, and our recommended actions balance the competing interests within them. We take these goals very seriously, and it is precisely this need for balancing that we request you support this article and take this project to the next step. We are exactly where we thought we would be when we started this project. We have several exciting ideas for improvement of the district, and we have data to support the engineering solutions. The concept phase was essentially a feasibility study. The results are that there are several feasible solutions. This next phase and the funding requested is necessary to provide more in-depth engineering and refine the project to create the town center that meets all of the community's goals. Due to the historic sensitivity of the area and the narrow road right-of-way we have to work within, the concept designs do not provide the level of detail that we need in order to make a final decision on the design of the intersection. This will not be the last time we are here requesting funding for this project, though. The construction phase, as estimated, may be as high as $2 million. It may be lower, depending on the final project we ultimately approve. The SIAC is reviewing funding sources. The SIAC is reviewing funding sources and hopes to leverage town appropriations with other funds for the actual construction. The town must be proactive in restoring the town center to its rightful place as a historically significant, cherished landscape. Our neglect over the past years has further diminished its appeal and must be reversed. Significant effort and money has already been spent to get us to this point. The project is a major goal of the Board of Selectmen, and to reject this funding proposal jeopardizes the entire project. We urge your support of Article 29 and continued study of the project.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 29? Yes. Yes.
Yes. I'm Bridget Hansen, 19 Brewster Road. Brewster Road is very...
If you hold the mic a little closer.
It's very close to the town center, and I go through this intersection all the time, and it's a really bad intersection. Turning left is taking your life in your hands. And this is a really good project, but I agree with the minority report. I don't think this is the right way to use the CPA money. We voted to tax ourselves so that we could build up piles of money to do really good projects that would not otherwise get done, like preserving the Piper Farm and repairing the Hosmer House and the Carding Mill House, which has been rotting all these years. And I think this is a misuse of the CPA. This is not, with all due respect, really historic preservation. It's a highway project. It's not open space. It's not historic. It's not recreation. It's not... community housing, and I don't think we should not vote for it. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 29? Yes, right over there, please. Could you stand up, sir?
Hello. John Starr, Woodside Road. From the proposals I've seen, there were five initially. One being just upgrading the signals with lights and improved signaling, and that was not presented to us tonight. Instead, we got the three out of five that were the most disruptive in terms of reducing amount of green space around this town center. And I cannot see in any way how the proposals that appear to be the ones that are gaining the thrust of support from this town is anything other than a major highway construction project instead of a community preservation type of project. And as such, I'm interested if I could request that the minority portion of the CPC, can they speak to us, or is that out of order?
You asked a question first about the lights. Let me get that question answered, and then we'll ask.
No, I didn't. Yes, I did.
Do you have a question that you wish addressed?
I have a two-part question. Are these just upgrading the lights, which was the option one it used to be? Is that under consideration, or are we bound to these three that we just saw here, or are we still possibly able to come up with other options? That's my first question. Then my second question is, can we hear the minority portion of the committee report to us why they thought it was not acceptable?
Thank you. Mr. O'Brien, for an answer to the first question.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. All options are on the table. No decisions have been made. In terms of a graphic to show you, there would really not be much to show on the view graph in terms of improving lights. The best example I could give you would be Wayland Center, where there would be some larger arms and more light fixtures and modern appliances so that they could be timed and sequenced better. The examples that we've shown were just that, examples. Three, there are seven. As the gentleman said, there were five that were designed. There were two alternative plans that were created by members of the First Parish, who is a large stakeholder in this. And they were suggested to the committee and considered as well. And just to finish the statement, this $30,000 is money that would only be used for the historic aspect. We have two historic church buildings. We have the Grange Hall. We have Town Hall. We have the Hosmer House, all within the study area of Town Center. And that is why it is the belief of the majority report that the use of CPA funds is applicable to this particular area. Beyond the funding of the highway improvements, road improvements, whatever you'd like to call it, which would be done through Chapter 90 funds, which is state funds that come to the town each year to be used for road maintenance and improvement projects.
Thank you. Do either of the two dissenters? Yes, we have one. Could you bring a mic to this gentleman here?
Hello, I'm Richard Bell, 24 Austin Road. I'm on the CPC committee, and one of the two members who felt that this really wasn't an appropriate use of the CPA Act funds, that much as Bridget Hansen said, that we feel that there are better use for the funds, and it doesn't really, in my reading of the Act, it isn't really an appropriate use of the funds, especially since you talked about there $70,000 came out of the capital budget and then $30,000 more from the CPC funds. In other words, 30% of the project is being put forward as being part of having the historic and open space aspects, and I don't think that's true. I'm really very much in favor of the project, but I just don't believe that the CPA is the place for the funds to come from. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 29? Yes, right here, please. Can you pass the mic?
Thank you. James Hill, 199 Concord Road. I'm on the CPC committee, and I'm also on the Historic Commission. And the Historic Commission voted to support this article because we believe that the town center is a very historic area, and all the buildings surrounding it, as Mr. O'Brien, Selectman O'Brien mentioned, we believe that the redesign of the center
50% of it is historic, let alone just 10% of this third, or 10% of the one-third of the 30%. So we support strongly that you move forward with Article 29. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, this gentleman here.
I'm Frank Reap, and I'm a member of the Historic Districts Commission and the Historic District Commission's representative on the Sudbury Center Committee. And I've been involved with this from the beginning for a year and a half ago. And I want to assure everybody in the hall that historic preservation is one of the primary thrusts of this effort. It's a very difficult challenge because while the project was initiated because of the difficulties of traffic movement and because of safety issues, we have launched into and pursued such a diligent work process because of the historic preservation issues. Everything within the historic in the study area is historic, and without the proper funding and the proper process, this will revert to a simple highway project. What we're trying to do is to make this simply an historic preservation project with a transit component. We need the support of the town to do this properly, or we will lose a significant part of our heritage. One of the last vestiges of a complete historic landscape that defines Sudbury. I very much urge the support of the hall.
Mr. Reap, can you pass that mic to the young lady behind you?
Laura Abrams, 24 Goodmans Hill Road. Last night, some people in the hall voted to give more money to the CPC for the rail trail. The rail trail is going to involve further traffic into the center of town where it crosses 27, right by Ty Sales. I want to know why we're giving more money to the town tonight for a study for the traffic congestion in the center and whether or not these two committees are going to be working together. I'd like the selectmen to answer that.
Mr. O'Brien?
If I could just clarify that the Rail Trail Committee and the Town Center Committee would be working together. Certainly when we get to the point where designs are coming forward and there's more particular and specific designs, we'll be in touch with the Rail Trail Committee. And I know that some of their members have attended meetings on the Town Center project already. The area that is defined by the Town Center Committee does go down to Peckham Road and the area of Ty Sales that you described, Ms. Abrams, and it goes up past the historic cemetery on the north side and down towards Goodman Hill Road on the south side and over just past the entrance to the Flynn Building, the driveway to the Flynn Building on the east side. So, yes, there'll be close interaction there, and we've even discussed the fact that we should probably go as far as to include some integration when a decision is made on lighting fixtures to make sure that there's some integration between the lights at hopefully the new police station as well as the primary fire station and the lights in town center so that when equipment rolls on an emergency call, those lights could all go to red so that the equipment could pass safely through that area.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 29? Gentleman right there, please.
John Starr again, Woodside Road. I just would urge that everyone consider strongly before you vote for the use of these funds. I find it not plausible that we need to do a $100,000 survey if the option that we really think we might proceed with here is improved signaling around our historic town center. All of these projects, if you look at them in great detail, are the money involved, the surveying involved, everything that's involved in the costs that the town is proposing for you to do right here is for engineering for road construction. So I urge that you defeat this as a CPC Act fund.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 29? I see no other hands. All those in favor of the motion as it appears in the review graph, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It passes by well more than the required majority. We move on to Article 30. Mr. Morley.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to appropriate the sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee in the following Community Preservation budget for FY08. Said sums to be raised by FY08 Community Preservation surtaxes. $95,000 administrative and operating costs, $793,098 debt service, and further to reserve the following funds: $226,342 for historic preservation, $975,560 for budgeted unrestricted CPC uses.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley.
Okay, this is the last CPC article.
You were going to tell us that the difference between the motion that you just made and what appears in the warrant are essentially all
the
money.
Numbers. All the numbers are different.
All the numbers are now there. Yes, sir.
So, this is the last one. Now we have to put the monies in their proper places for the town accountant. The committee report on this in your warrant has most of the details except some of the exact numbers, but it actually has the debt explained and other things explained. I did want to point out a couple of items. As we discussed last night, we have to reserve 10% of our budgeted revenues in each of three categories: open space, community housing, historic preservation. That reserve is made only if the 10% or more has not been spent this year. The debt service number that you see up here is mostly for open space, which makes it way over the 10% reserve number of $250,000. Earlier tonight, we spent community housing's $250,000 10%, as well as the leftover housing reserves from previous years. That leaves historic preservation number that you see being reserved here. There is no 10% reserve for recreation. The last number in the motion, budgeted unrestricted reserves, is our savings number, which can be appropriated by town meeting in all four categories. So actually here tonight, together with historic reserves, we're saving $1.2 million. With this addition and the end of the fiscal year, June 30th, the CPA reserves in Sudbury are headed towards $6 million. Thank you.
Bill Nealon, FinCom.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Selectman O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen urges approval of this article and would like to extend our thanks for another year's worth of tremendous work by the nine members of the committee that put in a tremendous amount of time and effort.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 30? I see no hands. All those in favor of Article 30, raise your hands. All those opposed? It's almost unanimous. Thank you. Article 31. I have here that Peter Glass or Robert McDonald are going to make a motion on Article 31. Hang on. Wait till you get to the mic and give your name and address for the record.
Bob McDonald, 23 Aaron Road. I make a motion, Article 31, amend town bylaws, use of wood fire boilers. Move to amend the town of Sudbury bylaws by adding thereto a new article entitled Use of Outdoor Wood Fired Boilers. Said article to be numbered by the town clerk as follows. Section 1, Statement of Purpose. This bylaw is intended to protect the health and quality of life of citizens of Sudbury by establishing the circumstances under which outdoor wood fire boilers may be used. Section 2, Definition. A. An outdoor wood fired boiler, OWB, is defined as a wood fired boiler surrounded by a water jacket or cover in a freestanding structure with a smoke vent or stack used to heat water that is carried by piping to provide heat and or hot water to a building.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Section 3, prohibition.
Hang on.
No person shall operate, install, or allow the installation of an OWB subject to the requirements of this section unless the OWB, A, is located more than 500 feet from any residence other than a residence served by the OWB. Section 4, penalties. Any violation of these regulations shall be punished by a penalty of $100 for the first offense. Each day of violation shall constitute a separate offense.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. McDonald, could you start off by just telling us the difference between the motion as appearing in the view graph that you just read and what you had put in the warrant?
Yes. The article printed in the warrant has been changed on the advice of the planning board. We took out any aspect that might be ambiguous or complicated and just left the most important feature, the 500-foot setback from any neighbor's home. We removed some of the sections in there that were complicated, so we simplified it.
Thank you. Go ahead.
This alone removes the health risk and nuisance factors created by outdoor wood-fired boilers or OWBs and almost entirely eliminates the possibility of them being operated or installed in Sudbury. I repeat, the 500-foot setback does the job. Under this bylaw, there would be no operating OWBs in Sudbury. There is absolutely no reason to attempt to monitor emissions from OWBs. There is no one available to do the monitoring. It would be difficult, expensive, and complicated. This bylaw sets a reasonable safety zone and a penalty for infractions enforceable under Article 6 of Sudbury bylaws and Massachusetts general laws. Simple and effective. An outdoor wood-fired boiler or OWB is a small building or shed. The 24-hour-a-day wood fire inside keeps a reservoir of water hot. The water can then be pumped to an adjacent home for heat and hot water purposes. These devices, once rare and only in rural areas, are growing in popularity because they can save money on heating costs. Basically, it is a personal use-sized power plant. Imagine, if you will, that NSTAR proposed building something like this cold fire plant in Sudbury. It's likely the town government and citizens would reject the proposal. We hope that town meeting will at least regulate and restrict the use of private power plant OWBs in Sudbury based on these four criteria. The proposed bylaw requires a setback of 500 feet from any neighbor's home. No state, county, or town that we've heard of has made a setback less than 200 feet. NESCOM, in conjunction with the EPA, has recommended 500 feet. This is from the American Lung Association of Maine. Quote, "The American Lung Association of Maine strongly cautions against the use of outdoor wood boilers for residential heating purposes. Until such time that these boilers can be designed to meet acceptable public health criteria, we do not support the use and view them as a potentially important lung health hazard. All combustion devices release pollutants that are harmful to lung health. For certain classes of these pollutants, such as fine particles and toxic air contaminants, there is no safe level of exposure," end quote. The EPA reports, quote, "Fine particle pollution is linked to a variety of health problems, including aggravated asthma, reduced lung function, development of chronic bronchitis, irregular heartbeat, non-fatal heart attacks, and premature death in people with lung disease. Children, people with heart and lung disease, and older adults are most vulnerable to the effects of particle pollution," end quote. If you've ever had wood smoke blow in your face, you know that your eyes water and you start to cough. Everyone would agree breathing wood smoke is unhealthy. The only question is, how far away is safe? The EPA and NESCOM and we say no closer than 500 feet to eliminate risk. Everyone's sensitivity is different. Some can smell the constant smoke even inside the house with the windows closed. Others only when they go outside. Buying in Sudbury, we all expected that our neighbors would not assault our eyes or ears or noses by their activities. Living with the reek of wood smoke 24 hours a day for months on end is intolerable. The New York Times reports that Mr. Nowak from Chicopee sold his house because of a neighboring wood boiler. He first sold it for $222,000, but after the buyer learned there was constant smoke, he demanded his money back. Mr. Nowak eventually found another buyer after knocking $30,000 off the price. That's a 13.5% drop in price. The equivalent for an average $600,000 home in Sudbury would be a loss of $81,000. At a time when the world's governments are finally taking steps to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, how can we countenance the proliferation of OWBs that contribute to greenhouse gases nationally or locally? NESCOM estimates there are 155,000 units in operation now, and that there could be as many as 500,000 in operation by 2010. In addition to greenhouse gases, an investigation by the New York State Attorney General's Environmental Protection Bureau found that even when used properly, one unit emits as much fine particle pollution as two old-fashioned heavy-duty diesel trucks, 12 EPA indoor wood stoves, 1,000 homes with oil heat, and 1,800 homes with natural gas heat. It's important to note that the smoke that comes out of an OWB is not the smoke that comes out of a regular fireplace. It's much more intense, and it's much more in volume, and it's much more dangerous. In states of Maryland and Washington, you can't operate an OWB. They don't meet air quality standards and never will. In Massachusetts, every town where an OWB has been installed, the town, usually the Board of Health, has regulated and banned them. Towns like Longmeadow, Chicopee, Tisbury, Northampton, Hadley, and Holyoke, every town that is except Sudbury. The Board of Health tells us that there are other sources of pollution, and since we can't ban them, and compared to all pollution, OWBs are insignificant. The board won't regulate them, won't establish a safe distance from the neighbors, or stop new ones from coming to town. Do you think the pictures you have seen are the same as an SUV going down a street? If you lived next door to an outdoor boiler and had to breathe in nuisance smoke, would you consider that insignificant? When you go to a restaurant, you no longer have to breathe secondhand smoke from even one cigarette during the course of your meal, maybe 1 or 2 hours. I do not have that kind of protection in my own home, and I need to or have to breathe in the smoke from the equivalent of 12 wood stoves 24/7. The planning board was, quote, unanimous in its belief that OWBs should be banned from Sudbury because their operation constitutes an inherent nuisance that should not be allowed to exist under zoning, end quote. One has the expectation in moving to Sudbury of a high quality of life and safety. No cell towers, no high power lines, or smoky power plants next door. We know how sensitive people are to what is in their neighborhood. You may hear of someone wanting to grandfather the existing OWBs in town. Evidently, that person feels that one citizen's wanting to save money is more important than the possible decreased safety or quality of life of the neighbors. At least one OWB owner went to town council before installing his. He checked to see if there were any laws and regulations. Why? Because everything you read about OWBs, except from the manufacturers, details the distress of neighbors from the smoke and the toxins and their efforts to ban and regulate OWBs. Evidently, the owner, heedless of the impact now or then or now, on his neighbors, wanted to get in under the wire, hoping that the people of Sudbury would not act to protect the health of the fellow residents. Even though the fire department or the Board of Health could close these OWBs down under mass air quality laws right now, they choose not to. They don't support this bylaw, which is now simple and clear. 500 feet, that's it. They're willing to wait to see if the state will do it, if it ever does. None of these folks lives next to an OWB. But because the Board of Health failed to vote on their own boiler moratorium, one could move in next to you. An OWB is one way to heat your house, but it's 1,000 times more polluting than an oil heat system. There's no downside to passing this bylaw tonight. If the Commonwealth passes regulations by the fall, nothing is lost. If they don't, quality of life, the health, and the environment are protected here in Sudbury. All the organizations and agencies we have quoted tonight declare that this amount of smoke to be a health hazard. We know secondhand smoke is harmful. There's no more debate on that, especially with children living in a house. We know that secondhand smoke is harmful, especially to children living in a house with an OWB near one. You don't grandfather a health hazard, do you? The research shows that smoke reduces the immune system of children, reduces their lung growth, and can lead to bronchitis, asthma, and other diseases, including cancer. There are hundreds of families that are affected by OWBs, and there is nothing to prevent more from being put in except this article. If you would not want an outdoor boiler as a neighbor, if you would not want the constant nuisance smell of thick smoke in your yard and in your home, if you would not want your child or your spouse exposed to the health risks of secondhand boiler smoke, then please support this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we hear from Chuck Woodard for the Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
John Drabinski for the Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen appreciate the issue that Mr. McDonald and Mr. Glass have brought before the town meeting here. It's a very complex and issue that's not easily resolved by town meeting. The regulatory environment regarding wood-fired boilers is rapidly changing. And our suggestion to the town would be, let's see what these changes bring. And if they don't bring something that's suitable, then we'll have more information that we all can make informed decisions next year. We're not referring this to the committee, and I don't think that's what we want to do. We just want to get the appropriate information that town meeting makes an informed decision based on the facts. I don't think all the facts are out. As I said, the regulatory landscape is changing very rapidly, and we may see regulations that may help or hinder the situation. But I think it's premature for us to make a decision like this based on the facts presented. I think we all are concerned about carbon management, greenhouse gases, and I think it's a situation we all have to work on, but it's going to have to be really driven by the state and the federal government. And so I think the board, we really don't support the article. We support the concept, but we're not sure what the impact is be for the community. So right now we would recommend voting against the motion.
Thank you. I think the hall would like to hear from the Board of Health to see, A, if they have a position on it, and, B, does the Board of Health aware of how many OWBs there are in Sudbury?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Donald Kern. I'm a member of the Board of Health, and just as a point of personal privilege, I'd like to thank the voters of the town for reelecting me for another term on the board. Next slide, please. The last meeting of the Board of Health, public meeting that was held prior to town meeting, was on March 8th. And at that time, the board voted to take no position on Article 31. The primary reason was that the petitioners did not bring this article to the Board of Health to discuss it with the Board of Health. So we felt we should not take a position. Although there was discussion with the Planning Board and with the Board of Selectmen. A number of health matters have been raised. As Mr. Drabinski mentioned, this is a complex issue. There are health components. Much of it has to do with things other than health. But in relation to health, particulate pollution from any source is a potential health hazard. And there are many studies, some of which you've heard about. There was one study that was done at Harvard that demonstrated comparing cities that urban areas that have high levels of pollution to urban areas that have lower levels of pollution, and there's a correlation with asthma, with heart disease, and this is replicated in other studies as well. However, this is any kind of particulate pollution, and the most common sources are diesel and gasoline engines, electricity production and power plants. You did see one slide that shows that. Industrial sources and wood burning is a source of particulates. Next slide, please. To also show you some of these sources, because one can always find pictures that show the extreme. This is what school buses can potentially do. They have diesel engines. The older school buses are significantly polluting. There are new rules so that school buses, I believe, starting in 2005, have to have much better controls against pollution. Next slide. Diesel truck. Next. Automobiles. We have a lot of automobile traffic in Sudbury. Next. SUVs. SUVs, most of them are regulated as trucks, not as cars. Trucks are allowed to produce more particulates than cars are. At Sudbury Day, I did a count in the parking lot, and 60% of the vehicles were SUVs. This is the kind of smoke that a fireplace can produce. And one more picture is what a wood stove can produce. Fireplace and wood stoves also burn wood and also produce particulates. Next slide, please. In Sudbury, the other sources to talk about, we have outdoor wood burning. I've been informed the fire department is actually the department in town that issues permits for outdoor wood burning. I was told that they've issued in excess of 800 permits this year alone. Fireplaces in town, I think most of the homes in town have fireplaces. Very few of these are EPA certified. The state of Washington, which was mentioned in the earlier presentation, regulates the construction of fireplaces as well as wood stove installation. Wood stoves, yes, modern wood stoves, currently sold wood stoves, are EPA certified and pollute less than older wood stoves. However, the best estimate we have is that only about 20% of wood stoves in Sudbury are EPA certified. Also, they have to be operated and maintained properly for their low pollution levels to be maintained. And if they're not maintained properly, then they pollute as much as an older wood stove. To our knowledge, to the Board of Health, that there are three currently operating outdoor wood boilers in the town of Sudbury. As also mentioned, there are pending state regulations. January 29th of this year, the federal EPA issued model regulations. They did this in collaboration with the organization that was previously mentioned, the Northeastern States for Coordinated Air Use Management. So both the advocacy groups and the EPA were in agreement on these proposed regulations. These are being proposed to the states. That's really the intent. And we are understanding that Massachusetts DEP is reviewing that and does plan to have regulations by the end of this year. Their intent, we're told, is to be in time for the next heating season. So the kinds of considerations, I think, for the voters here that you should think about, there are issues of fire safety in any kind of wood burning, whether one has a fire inside the house or outside the house. There may be issues of property values. The New York Times article that was mentioned, the reporter did not check into the veracity of that story. They were just quoting one individual who made that claim. But it is potential. Some people think that having antique wood stoves, which are relatively highly polluting, enhance property values. But it's something you may wish to think about. The appearance of fireplaces in a home. People may be concerned with, and it can have effects on the ecology and on health. So along with the selectmen, our suggestions for the voters would be not to adopt the article at this time, but rather wait for statewide regulations through DEP that will come in the fall, see what DEP does. If we are still not satisfied, then we can look at if we're truly interested in the health issues of particulates, then we should have more comprehensive regulations that look at all the potential sources. And in the meantime, what people can do as individuals is just try to reduce their activities that create these particulates, which, again, the great majority in Sudbury are coming from our autos and trucks. Thank you very much.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Yes, right here.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Michael Fee, 48 Henry's Mill Lane, Chairman of the Planning Board. Very briefly, I just want to dispel any notion that you may have formed that the Planning Board supports this article in any way. It does not. We met with the petitioners. We viewed their presentation. We considered it, and we communicated to them very definitively that we had significant concerns regarding the structure, the language, the enforcement provisions, as well as the fact that as a citizen's petition on a very complicated issue, this is not a warrant article that was fully vetted through the normal process that one would expect to go through if you were amending the bylaws of the town of Sudbury. Generally, in a situation like this, it is our experience that a complicated issue would go through multiple hearings before multiple boards, and there would be a greater deal of citizen input in determining whether or not we were going to change our bylaws in such a drastic way. The quote that Mr. McDonald read to you was plucked out of an email that I sent to him, and it was the one piece of language in that email amidst all of the caveats that we had regarding the language that he was proposing. And that language that he plucked out was the suggestion that the town, or at least the planning board, would be willing to look at a warrant article that proposed to ban OWBs on the basis that they constituted a nuisance. But the planning board would only support that type of warrant article if we were to go through this process, and that was indeed the consensus of the town, not at town meeting, but in the year-long process that leads up to town meeting. So I just wanted to make that clear, Mr. Moderator. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Karen Bent, Hudson Road. My husband and I are the owners of the outdoor wood stove on Hudson Road. Just as an indoor wood stove or fireplace, our outdoor wood stove emits smoke, but what has been portrayed here tonight is severely exaggerated. There is also steam emitted that greatly exaggerates the appearance of smoke. The majority of the time, you would never know we even had an outdoor wood stove. Our decision to make this purchase was done with careful consideration. We considered several factors, all in the interest and concern for the health and safety of our two small children. We considered an indoor wood stove, but saw the statistics of chimney and house fires that indoor wood stoves and fireplace cause and did not want to bring that risk to our home. The town crier recently reported about a fire caused by a log that rolled out of a fireplace. This caused significant damage to the Sudbury home. Thankfully, in that case, no one was injured. Having an indoor heating appliance would also have come with the risk of our children being burned. Again, a risk we were not willing to take. Before making our purchase, we also inquired at the Sudbury Fire Department to ensure we complied with all regulations. The fire department called the state fire marshal and informed us there were no regulations and we could proceed. We also spoke with a Sudbury firefighter who has seen the devastating effects of fires firsthand. He endorsed the outdoor wood burner for its safety as he operates one of his own. Firewood is a renewable energy source that allows us to rely less on foreign oil. Burning of wood is also carbon neutral, which means there is no net increase in greenhouse gas emissions. Burning of firewood is environmentally responsible and a heating fuel, which is endorsed by the U.S. Forestry Service. Although the EPA has reported that emissions for an OWB were of the same order as other stick wood burning appliances. Being in the firewood business, we sell several hundred cord of wood each year to residents of Sudbury and surrounding towns. Many of these people are buying multiple cords. These customers are using firewood as a heat source, just as we are. On the morning I wrote this presentation, I counted 11 homes on a 2-mile stretch of Hudson Road with chimneys smoking. to be burning firewood at 8 o'clock in the morning on a weekday, I think you would agree these people are burning for heat, not ambiance. Of the wood stoves in use, it is estimated that 75 to 80% of those wood stoves are not EPA certified. Although any wood stove manufactured after 1990 needs to comply with the EPA regulations, it is not a requirement of an indoor wood stove to be installed in Sudbury or in most other places. The only requirement is that it's UL certified, a certification that our wood burner holds. According to the town report, there were 1,099 outdoor wood burning permits last year. That equates to one in every five homes in Sudbury are outdoor burning. To say one person can burn wood but another cannot is discrimination. The Firefighting Academy, 1 mile down the road from our house, burns 10 to 12 fires per day, simulating small house fires for training purposes. All of this wood burning around us, but this article is proposing that we cannot burn firewood unless our home is 500 feet, which equates to almost two football fields away from another house. This slide shows the sources of wood burning in the U.S. each year. There are 16 million fireplaces represented in red, 8,300,000 non-certified stoves represented in orange, 1 million certified wood stoves represented in yellow, and the OWBs are in white, an extremely small percent of overall burning. As for the issue of particle matter comes from many sources, the most significant automobiles, trucks, buses, lawnmowers, road paving, agricultural operations, construction, all abundant in Sudbury. Particle matter studies regarding health are done looking at the sources collectively. To ban outdoor wood burners, which overall make an insignificant contribution to particle matter, is ineffective. To ban an outdoor wood burner would be like banning only one make of a car, ineffective and unfair. Next slide, please. As a responsible outdoor wood burner owner and local family of Sudbury, we burn well-seasoned firewood. When we did find out that one person had complained, we responded by investing another $2,500 on top of our original investment of $12,500 to increase our stack height and install a draft inducer to correct any smoke issue. We have not had one complaint since. We will also voluntarily shut the wood burner down May 1st in alignment with the outdoor wood burning season. We also support fair regulations. What will be next, indoor wood stoves and fireplaces, all outdoor wood burning? This article will set the precedent. I am passionate about our decision to buy an outdoor wood stove. We made this choice for two most important reasons, our two children. I respectfully ask you to vote against this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Yes, right here in front. Can you bring a mic down in front here? They can bring you a mic.
Carol Hanauer, Old Lancaster Road. I have a question for Mr. Kenny. Generally speaking,
Can you bring the mic closer to your mouth?
Sorry, is that better? Yes, definitely. I have a question for Mr. Kenny. Generally speaking, changes to the laws are not retroactive. Is this law, if it passes, this bylaw, if it passes, going to be retroactive so that the three existing outdoor wood burning stoves will have to be shut down? Thank you.
Mr. Kenny.
Mr. Moderator, the answer to that is yes. They will be retroactive. In regular bylaws, there is no grandfathering unless the bylaw itself provides for it.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Down in front here.
Hi. John Platt, 273 Lincoln Road. My wife Laura and I use an indoor wood boiler to heat our home. It's designed, tested, legal, intended to be installed inside the home. We welcome performance-based wood stove regulations because we know our appliance will easily pass them. We selected this advanced model of indoor boiler because it burns so cleanly. Our boiler burns renewable fuel safely and cleanly at very high temperatures using gasification technology in a ceramic post-combustion chamber. Often, we cannot even tell it is running because the exhaust gases are completely clear. It burns much, much cleaner than the conventional cast iron wood stove, which we also own. It's really quite clever and interesting. We invite anyone who is interested to look at the website or come visit me and I'll show you. It's alternateheatingsystems.com. When Fire Chief Dunn and Building Inspector Jack Hepting granted us approval to install our boiler, we decided to locate it outdoors because that's where the wood is. I met Bob McDonald and Peter Glass 2 months ago, and I encouraged them to come see our heating unit. The McDonald Glass Article 31 does not account for the fact that our boiler runs clean. It doesn't account for it because they didn't take me up on my offer. Article 31 effectively bans almost all Sudbury homeowners from installing a renewable fuel boiler, as we have because almost no one in Sudbury can meet the arbitrary 500-foot setback it proposes. It would ban our installation, and we would probably have to go back to using our less clean cast iron stove. Ironically, the proposal would have the opposite of its intended effect on air quality for our neighbors. Article 31 bans or allows renewable fuel appliances not based on whether they produce clean combustion gases, rather bans them on whether they happen to be installed inside or outside. Article 31 imposes a permanent bylaw on the entire community in an attempt to address a temporary dispute between two neighbors. Passing or rejecting Article 31 makes only one of them a winner. By the way, I'm familiar with the technical design and operation of the type of boiler on Hudson Road, and I know some approaches that may help make it burn even cleaner. My wife and I believe in the future of renewable and sustainable energy. Clean biofuel technology like the one we have at our house has been widely applied at the home level all over the progressive European Union regulatory environment for 20 years. It's now easily accessible in the U.S. On the web. I challenge interested parties to bring to the voters a performance-based standard for renewable fuel appliances, a win-win standard that we can all feel good about. I have a few slides. This is my wife's installation. That's the view from the road. You see some smoke. It does smoke. The smoke varies. When it's cold, it smokes more. When the machine is cold, as it warms up, it's virtually clean. That is what it looks like after it's reached operating temperature. But sometimes you see no smoke at all. That's the view from my back porch. And that's it. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Yes, standing up over there.
The intention of this article is to protect the future of Sudbury.
Just for the record, can we have your name again?
Bob McDonald, 23 Ann Road. The intent of this article is to protect the future of Sudbury and to protect the residents. There's been a lot of disinformation that's been put up here about outdoor wood boilers. The researchers that have put in the effort to understand how these boilers work and what comes out of the stack are unanimous that the outdoor wood boiler contributes first to greenhouse gases. They're not carbon neutral, and they are about 12 to 20 times, emit 20 times more smoke than just a regular fireplace or a wood stove. There's no debate about that. What you're hearing is because there's SUVs in the world, there are diesel buses in the world, that we shouldn't try to do something about what we can control, and that is literally what's in our own backyard. There's been a mention that the emissions are insignificant. Well, I would agree if you take a look at all of the pollution that's in the world, yes, an OWB is insignificant, but it's not when it's next door to you, and that's the discussion. And it's also about reputation of a town. There are towns I've spoken to that are Chicopee and Holyoke and Hadley, and they're looking at us and they're saying, aren't you the affluent, educated community and you haven't done anything about wood boilers to this point? They haven't had to go through any steps and gyrations as I've been made to do in order to try to get the word out to protect the public health. Only one person in Chicopee had to say that these boilers were bad, and they did the research. And only one person had to say something in Holyoke. And I spoke to Mr. Nowak personally, and there was a mention made that, you know, the story wasn't substantiated and so forth. I substantiated the story. I spoke to Mr. Nowak himself, and he gave me a firsthand account of how he could not sell his house and his property values went down. And as the word gets out that Sudbury has no laws or rules or regulations about OWBs being permitted or be able to be put in town, do you think that people are going to want to purchase here? The word is getting out. We already mentioned earlier that in Washington State you can't run an OWB. In Maryland you can't run an OWB. There's laws in Iowa, Ohio, Indiana, all across the United States. There are communities. There are now basically 200 communities in New York that you can't run an OWB. And people are taking a look at the information and understanding that this particular matter is bad. It's not healthy for little children. And the other thing that I wanted to say is we need to control what we can. And that you saw the picture of the school bus emitting the smoke. Diesel trucks, diesel buses, anything diesel, there's a 5-minute rule that you can't idle more in one space for 5 minutes. You saw how dirty the diesel bus was up there? Well, one of these OWBs is equivalent to two of those diesel buses right next door to you, and they're running 24 hours a day. So I ask you to consider the health aspects. I ask you to consider the fact that it affects property values. The Board of Health told me that the place to go was town meeting with this because they didn't want to touch it. So it's really in your hands now. You have the vote. But I think for the long-term interest of Sudbury, we're best off not having outdoor wood boilers in people's backyard and a proliferation of them, because when the state gets through putting through their law, what's right now before the Senate and the House, it's going to have grandfathering of OWBs. Right now, the setback is 200 feet. The boiler industry is pushing for a setback of 100 feet to 75 feet, from what I've been told. And then you can have them everywhere, because what you can do is you can buy one for about $5,000. Not everybody burns wood. They burn everything they can get their hands on to make it cost efficient, and that includes old contaminated pallets, could be waste oil if you go to some of these blog sites to talk about burning in your wood boiler. They will tell you how to burn waste oil.
Okay. Question's been called. Does it receive a second? It does. Yes?
Thank you. Who I know have important information to speak on. The gentleman who just spoke again for a second time. I think we really need to hear from some more people on this issue that have been holding their cards up. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. Actually, I'm afraid to tell you that the point of order is out of order. The question has been called. The question has been called. It received a second. I'll ask two questions. One is, anybody who has anything to add to the discussion that we haven't heard before, raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six. The second question I have here, if you have not made up your mind on this issue, please raise your hand. Okay, I see about a dozen or a dozen and a half hands that are held. So I will ask the hall to consider that when they vote on the call of the question. It's a two-thirds vote. All those who are in favor of the calling of the question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it is defeated. Anyone who hasn't spoken yet? Oh, the gentleman has been carrying the mic. He deserves to speak. Yes.
My name is Rusty Benton. I live at 539 Hudson Road. I'm the owner of the outdoor wood burner, and I sell firewood. I just want people to know that I probably sold a little over 20, 25 cords in just my neighborhood alone to people I know and customers. And I walk out of my house, I smell smoke, I look up, my thing's not even working. It's my neighbor. Or it's their neighbors that are burning wood beside them. So they smell smoke. It's like anything else. Well, it's from his unit, not from our neighbors that are burning in their wood stoves. It's from my unit. And they, you know, it's just a blame game here. I walk out of my house, I smell my neighbor's smoke. It's, you know, I've lived in this town for 36 years. My son is 14th generation. I'm not going anywhere. I've already heard that this doesn't matter, but, you know, one of the people here speaking against this is moving. He's already moved, and he's here tonight. So I just hope you guys realize that, you know, somebody's burnt wood for years, my family's burnt it for centuries, and I hope you vote for this.
Hang on. Anybody? Thank you. Anybody else who wish to be heard? Yes, this gentleman right here.
My name is Bob Gottberg. I live at 89 Mossman Road. I've been involved with pollution control, air pollution control, for over 35 years. The way the regulation is written is very poorly done. 500 feet, who knows what the contour of the land is? Who knows how high the stack is? None of these things are being addressed in the regulation. And we're talking about a total of 3 boilers in the town. The tail is wagging the dog. If you want to do something that's really important, let's get rid of all the wood-burning fireplaces in town. Nobody would want to do that, of course. Thank you.
Gentleman standing over there.
William Fairbank, Old Sudbury Road. Has there been any other complaints about the other 2 wood burners? Is Rusty the only complaint? I'm curious.
That's a rhetorical question, or you wish to have an answer?
I'm asking.
Have the Board of Health has any complaints relative to that? Lynn Geitz, Board of Health. You can go right there. Thank you.
Thanks. Lynn Geitz, Board of Health, 143 Maynard Road. Sudbury. To our knowledge, we have had only 1 complaint come into the Board of Health, and maybe 2 if you include Peter Glass. I'm not sure if he's being supportive of Bob McDonald or not.
Relative to what? Which OWB?
To the one that's operating on Hudson Road.
Thank you. Great. Anybody else wish to speak on the issue? Go ahead, as long as you have the mic.
Thanks.
Are you speaking as a member of the Board of Health or as an
individual? I'm speaking
as
a member of the Board of Health.
Okay.
I want to point out that the Board of Health has considered this complaint by Mr. McDonald and our understanding of his complaints. We've gone through the data systematically, and that involves, we did involve ourselves in terms of driving by the property many times that had the OWB to see what the amount of smoke was. In doing our own investigation of the data, not just the data that were presented to us by the Hudson Road resident or the person who's proposed Article 31, we think that the best route would be to be a cautious one, to let the EPA help us out on these things. When Mr. McDonald talks about Washington State banning OWBs, the reason Washington State has banned these OWBs is because there are no enforceable rates of emissions. So no one knows what's an acceptable rate. One might argue that any kind of pollution is unacceptable, and we need to keep that in context, because if we respond to any complaints, it's harming my health. There's lots of things that your neighbors do or that we do or restaurants provide in town, and we can't start banning everything. That's one thing. When Mr. McDonald talked about Tisbury has a 900-foot setback for OWBs. It happens to be the distance from one of the select persons or house to the OWBs. It is true. I read it, and
Excuse me. Ms. Geis, just address the chair, please.
I'm sorry. It is true. I'm sorry. Mr. McDonald might not agree. I've also done the background research for Holyoke and Chicopee also, and there are stories behind the stories. And that's not to say that these complaints are not legitimate in terms of these towns. But I do need to say that the Board of Health is here for the health. We are not here as a mechanism for one complaint. And I also have to say that we have offered to go to the house to see what the level of pollution is in the house, and we have not been called on that request back. So I'm not saying that this is not an issue for future, but it does require more research.
Thank
and
you.
I thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard who has new information to add? Question's been moved again. Do I have a second? All those in favor of the moving the question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, a vastly different result. It's well over two-thirds. We'll now move on to the main motion. Article 31, this is slide 2. Can we go back to slide 1? As you see it on the board, all those in favor of Article 31, the main motion, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It's almost over 80% opposed. It fails. We're on Article 32. Before we get to Article 32, I'd like to announce the reappointment of Sheila Stewart and Charles Woodard to the Finance Committee. I'd also like to thank the entire Finance Committee, particularly the Chairman, Bob Jacobson, for the long hours that they put in and the excellent work that they have done during these difficult financial times. I'd also like to thank Larry Rowe for his many years of service to the Finance Committee. He is stepping down at the end of this town meeting when his term is up. I'd also like to thank Maureen Valente, Mary McCormick, Patty Golden, Rosemary Harvell, Elaine Jones, Judy Newton, Mark Thompson, all of whom I have asked to assist us during town meeting, and they've done a remarkable job. Also, the LS staff, particularly the AV folks, Chuck back there, the LS building maintenance crew, and, of course, Town Council Paul Kenny, who is now attending his 30th year of town meetings as town council for the town of Sudbury, whose very sage advice have helped me over the last 4 years. Particularly, I would like to thank all of you for coming forward to town meeting. We've had a great turnout all three nights, and I appreciate your coming to exercise your right to legislate. We'll now move on after I tell you first. Would any town officials who were just elected a few weeks ago but have not been sworn in come forward to see the town clerk as soon as we dissolve? We're going to move on to Article 32, Sudbury Golden Age Passport. Is the petitioner here who wishes to make a motion? This was filed by petition. Is that petitioner here who wishes to make a motion? He is not. Do I hear a motion to indefinitely postpone Article 32?
Yes, Mr. Moderator, so moved.
Does that receive a second? Thank you. All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely postpone signify by raising your hands. All those opposed, it passes by well more than 80%. It required a majority. We'll move on to Article 33. Senior property tax relief. This was also by petition. Is the person who filed this petition present in the audience, and does he or she wish to make a motion? I see no one. Does someone wish to make an article, a motion to indefinitely postpone Article 33?
Yes, Mr. Moderator, so moved.
Is there a second? There is. All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely postpone, raise your cards. Those opposed, it receives well more than 80%. We'll move on to Article 34, which is Frost Farm and Northwood Street Acceptance Plan and Intermediate Assistance. Is the petitioner who brought forward this warrant article present in the hall, and does he or she wish to make a motion under Article 34? I see no one. Do I hear a motion to indefinitely postpone Article 34?
Yes, Mr. Moderator, I so moved.
Is there a second? There is. All those in favor of the indefinite postponement signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It passes by well more than 80%. We'll now move on to our non-binding resolution. It is Sudbury Citizens Resolution to postpone advancement on the proposed Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. I will call on Mr. Jim Negrelli to make a motion under Article 35. While he's waiting to do that, let me repeat what I said last night. As was the case with a non-binding resolution in 2004, which was our last one, there will be no debate on this non-binding resolution. The petitioner will tell us after he makes the motion there's a second. He will tell us why he brought forward this non-binding resolution. I will then ask the Finance Committee and the Board of Selectmen for their whether they are in favor or against the non-binding resolution. At that point, I will ask for a show of hands for all those of you who are in favor of the non-binding resolution. I will then ask for all those who are opposed to the non-binding resolution. If I can clearly tell from that show of hands that there's a clear majority in favor, I will so announce. Likewise, if it's in the negative. If it's too close to call, I will make that announcement. Under no circumstances will there be a vote count. That is exactly how we handled the non-binding resolution in 2004. Mr. Negrelli.
Good evening. Jim Negrelli, 51 Penny Meadow Road. I'd like to make a move in the words of the citizens' resolution. And I'd like to make a few comments.
Oh, hang on 1 second. Would you like to move to approve the resolution as it appears in the warrant for the 2007 annual town meeting under Article 35?
Yes, I would.
Yes, he's so moved. Is there a second? There is. Mr. Negrelli, please.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to make a few comments this evening on why Article 35 should be supported. The town, we believe, is premature in requesting additional CPA funds to be spent on a rail trail when so many questions remain unanswered, questions that the 2005 town meeting was led to believe would be answered before more money was requested for this non-essential amenity. Many of these critical questions would not cost the town money to resolve. The consultant's feasibility report failed to supply cost estimates for many expensive components it recommended for the trail. At this time, the true cost to the town for a trail is unknown. Unfortunately, the current CPA rail trail proposals will not provide this crucial information either. After the 2006 November public hearing, the consultant stated there is no guarantee state and federal monies will be available for this project. The selectmen have said that state and federal funds are necessary for construction of this trail because Sudbury funds alone will not be used. Therefore, the crucial question is, what type of a trail will the state require Sudbury to build in order to receive these funds if they become available? The identified fund for this project is the Transportation's Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Improvement Fund, also known as CMAQ funds. This fund has never financed an unpaved trail in Massachusetts. We don't even know what we will have to prove to qualify for these CMAQ funds. Sudbury needs to know if outside funding would even allow any alternative vision. Sudbury needs to know if outside funding would even allow any alternative vision to a wide paved transportation corridor. We can get that answer for free, and we need it first before spending any more money or valuable staff time on creating a vision that could never receive the necessary funds to get built. Additionally, it should be noted that critical components were omitted from the Rail Trail Advisory Committee's draft of the RFP for Article 23, the Wildlife Study. Specifically omitted was one, the reference that the study be done by an independent conservation biologist, two, that include a full representation of the species, and three, that a wildlife habitat impact be analyzed. Will the eventual RFP be more in the lines of what the RTCAC recommended, or will it turn out to be what is recommended by Mass Highway? Mass Highway only requires environmental coordination checklists, which is geared towards permitting and regulatory issues. For many reasons, it would not be in the town's best interest if the crucial wildlife study were to become just another watered-down checklist item with no meaning except to move along the development of this trail. However, there are benefits as Sudbury waits before expending more funds on trail development. The Conservation Commission that hasn't had direct input into process so far could provide valuable insight into what kind of a trail would comply with Sudbury's Wetlands Administration bylaw in order to receive permits. Neighboring towns with rail trails could be consulted to identify their expenses, experiences, and problems as well. Moreover, we could learn from Concord, who has hired a consultant to answer many questions that have also been posed in Sudbury, such as the width and type of trail surface that would qualify for funding, and exactly what is required to meet state and federal regulations. Sudbury would benefit from having these answers and others before proceeding. Prior to spending additional piecemeal amounts on a trail, let's have a vision. Let's know exactly what Sudbury Wetlands bylaws will allow. Let's find out what type of trail can be funded. Let's identify real costs to build and maintain the trail. And let's understand the true impacts to our town. Please support Article 35. Thank you.
Thank you. Ask for the Chuck Woodard on the Finance Committee, what the opinion of the Finance Committee is on this non-binding resolution.
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Thank you. Selectman John Dravinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen appreciate the dialogue. We don't support the petition. Thank you.
Thank you. I will now ask for a show of hands. Yes, sir.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Mr. Moderator, I think we need a more complete explanation of why there should be no debate on this motion than just the 2004 precedent. I think that you should tell us why the 2004 precedent applies, especially since my recollection is that the 2004 resolution had really nothing to do with town affairs. I think it was something to do with a national issue. And I don't remember that the petitioner in the case of 2004 was allowed to give as complete a presentation in favor of the resolution as was given tonight. Even though the resolution is non-binding, it can be reported as presenting a sense of the town. And I don't think that the reasons cited so far for having this motion be undebatable are convincing.
Thank you. Would it be more convincing, Mr. Coe, if I told you that I ruled it that way? That's a rhetorical question.
With all due respect, Mr. Moderator, I do not.
Okay. Basically, right before the 2004 non-binding resolution, I went through the history of Sudbury's non-binding resolution. And for the majority of them, I think it was the vast majority of them, there were no debates on non-binding resolutions for the very reason that they're non-binding. That whether that was a sense of town meeting back then, whether that's a tradition in Sudbury, or whether that was the ruling of moderators that preceded me. In addition, I asked about 50 moderators of 50 different towns, all open town meetings, whether when they heard non-binding resolutions, whether they debated them, and the vast majority of them said that they did not. And that is the reason why I have ruled that we will have no debate tonight or on any other non-binding resolution while I'm the moderator. But I appreciate the sentiment. So we'll go on to ask for a vote of the hall, please, a show of sentiment. All those in favor of the non-binding resolution on Article 35, please signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. The vast majority of people are opposed to the resolution. Thank you all very much for coming to town meeting. Do I hear a motion to dissolve the annual town meeting? Is there a second? All those in favor? All those opposed? It passes. Thank you again very much for coming.
Just arrived.
Well, I'm glad someone kept you funding.
Don't you want them?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Scott.